Welcome to Real Talk, Real Women, Breaking the Silence Around Abuse. I am Gemma Serenity Gorokoff, your host, and today we have the honor of having Dr. Christine Perkins joining us. Dr. Christine has been practicing naturopathic medicine since 1997. The successful treatment of her patients includes the use of homeopathic and botanical medicine, nutrition and supplementation, detoxification, emotional freedom technique, you know, the tapping technique, bioscan, the original Bowen technique, kundalini yoga, and transformational coaching. She has an extensive, successful clinical experience and is sought out for her expertise in the areas of emotional health, chronic complex disease, and transforming the cellular expression of disease into a state of abundant health through transformational mindset coaching, being referred to by her colleagues and peers within the conventional and naturopathic medical fields. Dr. Christine's focus on whole person healing brings together the aspects of physical, mental, energetic, and spiritual health and wellness. This is what I call the multiple bodies. She determines the underlying cause of symptoms and conditions and tunes into a person's needs so she can introduce healthy options that support a person's best health. So she has your best interest in mind. When speaking of her practice, she shares, "I want people to feel like they are coming home here, never suffering alone, and I want them to realize that they can get to a different level of health and wellness. I look at my hands and feel so honored by how many people they have helped, literally thousands." Dr. Christine, it's such an honor to have you today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
My first question, as we are on Real Talk, Real Women, Breaking the Silence Around Abuse, the main topic here is abuse, and it goes every way from self-abuse to domestic violence. What kind of abuse did you overcome, or do you know in your life experience that led you to be the wonderful doctor you are today?
Yeah, I feel like I've suffered through many different traumas throughout my lifetime. And each time there's been a sense of resilience inside of me, a sense of knowing. I heard you talk about it in your interview, a sense of God that would sort of speak to me and help me to survive. I grew up in a home with a father that we believe has narcissistic personality disorder. And I used to think that he was just a pathological liar. He would tell stories that put him in the center of the highlight of the story as a person that never had the career that he had. And we were all meant to kind of sit around and confirm the story for him. And if we didn't, we would have this narcissistic rage unleashed on us and we would get turned into the problem in the family. It was highly humiliating and very shaming as well to be part of that scenario with him, and very uncertain. I grew up in a world that was very, like, we had to walk on eggshells. We had to be ahead of him. In fact, I used to say I had to know how to outrun him. I had to be ahead of him so that I could read the signs and signals to know when he was going off on some tangent like that. Like, I can even remember being 15 and at our cottage and eating bacon. And we normally eat bacon with our fingers. This is how we've always eaten bacon. But we had a special guest with us that day at our picnic table. And I go to take a bite of bacon with my fingers, and my father slams his cutlery down on the table and he screams at me, "What do you think you're doing? We don't eat bacon with our fingers. Use your knife and fork, young lady." And it was just like, it's instant humiliation. And what was safe one day to do one thing, all of a sudden out of the blue, you weren't safe to be who you were. And I think that's probably the largest sense of this abuse, was that it wasn't safe to be me. And I learned how to be the ultimate chameleon. I learned how to be the ultimate girl who hid behind the mask. And even in high school, I was friends with all sorts of different groups of people, never really focusing on one group for fear of losing or being shamed or being ousted. Or so I had friends everywhere. I had this perfect plan set up, only it required a lot of work. It required a lot of work. And I was quite happy to escape that abuse. I mean, my father will always be my father. I no longer hold him to that sort of, I've accepted him for who he is. And I understand that he's done the best that he could have done with the circumstances that he had. It doesn't mean I expose myself to it though, or show myself in a vulnerable situation like that. But I have learned to transcend quite a bit of that and done quite a bit of forgiveness work with him. And then, you know, I grew up with a mother who'd been with my father since she was 15 years old, and she hadn't had much of a life. She'd been very controlled by that narcissistic partner. So when they split up when I was 9 years old, my mother really, which was the early 80s, my mother really dove in to having a life of her own and with her new partner. And my sister and I actually used to get taken at night to whatever party that my parents, my step parents and my mom were going to, and we'd be put to bed in a strange person's bed, and I would come out in the morning and I would be walking over drunken, stoned people with bottles and ashtrays full. And I honestly never knew necessarily where I would wake up. And it was quite frightening there as well. So leaving my father left one form of abuse, and another thing happened after he had left. And I learned to become very vigilant with observation. I learned to always have money in my pocket. I learned to make sure I knew exactly what street we were getting off of the highway when we pulled off somewhere, in case I needed to call my grandmother. I had a very stable person. One person, I think, can make such a huge difference in a young person's life in order to help them stay grounded and feel like they're loved, and really shift the dynamic of whatever abuse they're facing on their daily life. So my grandmother and her daughter, which were both my father's side of the family, were kind of pivotal in giving me that support and helping me move through my teenage years. I stayed close to them. And then another form of abuse that I entered into, which wouldn't surprise you, I'm sure, because we tend to marry our parents, or we tend to look for people that are like our parents and the familiar, was I moved into a 24-year relationship with my ex-husband that was very emotionally abusive. Very, I called it, he was passive-aggressive. He often used the slap and tickle. He would say, "Oh, you're the most beautiful woman in the whole world, and you're so wonderful, but I don't have any time to take you anywhere. We can't afford to go to a to dinner. I can't go on a trip with you. Oh no, we'd have to take our children." There was this very big confusion, and I find narcissistic behavior is very confusing like that. Like, on one hand, they're super loving and adoring to certain people, and on the other hand, they have, you know, you're the problem of everything. You're the problem. Everything is your fault. And so when I finally, you know, I'd worked on that marriage in the last 6 years to the best of my ability to make that grow and change, and it was not going to go anywhere. I had a couple of wake up moments in that relationship where I just knew that he was never going to change, and that I wasn't willing to put another 5 years of my life until my youngest son was out of high school, which was what I thought I would do. And then my life would begin. In fact, I used to think, it's rather sad now that I think back on it, with my ex-husband, I used to often think, my life will begin when he dies. That's how I used to think.
I remember that thought. It is exactly how I approached the first abusive relationship. And I was between the age of 17 and 22. And as I did marry a completely mentally sick person, even if I knew it without being able to put any words on it, because one of the things is that when there is narcissism traits or more, and other psychosis, one of the main things they do is to not get diagnosed. This is why you started by saying, a father who we believe was, because he would never, ever in the entire lifetime get diagnosed for that.
Yes.
Never, it's part of it. And I remember that exact thought. Okay, so as he's such in a bad mental health and physical health, he will die before me and my life will begin when he dies. What's that thought? I mean, we are settling for so little when we say that. And we are taking life for granted, which we should never.
I agree with you. And I feel like this gets patterned into us as children. Like, I believe my ability to accept a very low quality, very low standard, someone harming me emotionally, I believe I just learned to accept that as normal through my childhood. And so it was an easy transition into just being in a marriage and living in a marriage and raising children and being what I would call good co-partners. But I was also a really good pretender. I was really good at pretending we had a good life. We had good money. We had a lovely home. We had healthy children, but there was nothing between us. And what there was very abusive between us. And I remember feeling so sad and down, depressed with that feeling of, and I'm surprised too. I guess what I've learned over the years is that I'm actually quite strong. I'm an amazingly strong and talented woman, and I'm capable of getting through. I'm a survivor. I'm capable of getting through so many things. And my hiding was a tool to do that. My pretending was a tool. My ability to see the good in things as well isn't a remarkable thing that I managed to keep about me. I'm quite able to see the good in people. Even in my parents, I was still able to see the good, or my ex-husband. I'm quite capable. And this might have been one of the things I feel that saved me, was that I could see the good everywhere. I really could. And I could kind of separate that as something else, like there was something wrong with these people, rather than it always being about me. And I think that that helped me to transcend or be able to keep moving my life in a positive direction. So, while I was in naturopathic school, I'd met my ex-husband at the very beginning of becoming a naturopathic doctor, and we'd lived together while I was training to become a naturopathic doctor. And then I stayed with him until about, it was 2015 that we separated. So 8 years ago. And so I'd gone through so many trainings in naturopathic medicine. It's such a beautiful form of medicine because it's always evolving in terms of what the medicine is. And I found EFT, or emotional freedom technique, at the very beginning of my practice, maybe about 3 or 4 years in. And I had these two children and an unhappy marriage. And I had moved from Toronto area to Calgary, and I had been really isolated and alone as well, which really doesn't help in narcissistic relationships. And I found myself really depressed and overwhelmed and anxious, suffering from panic attacks, and had found emotional freedom technique. It actually took the universe 3 tries to get it to me. I had multiple exposures to it, and each time I was like, oh yeah, sure, be free of your negative feelings. Oh, you have to have them. And I kind of joked about it, but then finally I had an experience with it, and I don't think I'd be the same woman as I am today if I had not used emotional freedom technique and had a practitioner that I worked with and then trained with Gary Craig and learned some of the beautiful dynamics of EFT and how specific it is. I spend hours doing it each week with my patients in my practice because of how amazing of a shift it is on our internal dialogue, on our internal memories, on our post-traumatic stress that we carry around with us. It really shifts how we react to and perceive what's going on around us and from our past. So it was pivotal in my healing. And I was doing that all along, so, and then I did Kundalini yoga all the way along. You know, there were that many of these practices that I knew I needed balance. I knew I needed something. And I often shifted to the internal, the energy of EFT, the internal dialogue, the internal, area in Kundalini yoga. You're dealing with the energy from your chakras and your internal energy and shifting that and your connection to God and the infinite and your higher self. So I always kept coming back to that. But I still had this circumstance all around me. And I do really believe that it's the programming that I received from my childhood about really what I was worthy of. By the time you're 7, you sort of figure out on a subconscious level, your 95% of your programming is done. And that's what I bought into. And without consciously doing it, it was just a program I received that I was only worthy of this much as love or an emotional relationship. So when I left my ex-husband, within about 6 months of being gone, and remember, I had been wanting to leave that relationship for about 6 years. I'd been working on it and wanting to leave it and formulating it in my mind. So when I left, it wasn't a surprise to me. It might have been a surprise to my friends or to some of my family. It wasn't a surprise to me. I'd been working on it for a while, and I really got to the bottom of the barrel with that. But I was really, really wanting to experience love again. I am one of those people. I love love. And I love the institution of marriage and relationship. And so I was out dating again within 6 months. And sadly, those internal programs, I had not changed them enough. And I attracted into my life a narcissist actually on steroids. And I mean that literally. So he was self-medicating at, I don't know if you know much about prednisone, but at about 180 milligrams of prednisone a day, which is most people get 30 to 50. And you can actually cause a psychosis from being on that amount. He had an autoimmune disorder. And I really just felt compassion for him and empathy for him. And that is exactly the perfect target for another narcissist to come at me. And at first there was all this amazing love between us and passion and chemistry. And then I remember the day that he had one of those narcissistic rages and I had already moved in with him and I knew I felt caught right there. And I continued same way as before. I'm going to do this because, you know, I'll give it time. Maybe it'll change. You know, maybe he'll get off his medications. I could help him. All of these wonderful seeing the good, seeing the possibilities. And towards the end of that relationship, we were together for 2 years and a little series of events happened. My son, I have two sons, and my eldest son was visiting from his university and we were sitting having a game of cards. And I refused to let my partner do something that wasn't right. Like he was trying to cheat in a way. And I said, you can't do that. And he unleashed on me in front of my children with that rage. And I actually started to cry at the table. Like I couldn't help myself. I started to cry. I was already feeling so low in my self-worth and self-value. I had really allowed all of that negative conditioning that narcissists do to their victims, so to speak. And I am not a victim, and I was at the time, but I'm not anymore. At the level of fact, I might have been then, but not anymore. And at that time, I'd let that really affect me. It was subconscious. I didn't deliberately say, oh, I'm going to believe everything that he says and I'm going to take everything he says to heart. It just happened. So my son came to me later that night and he said, you know, Mom, have you ever thought about getting your own place? Have you ever thought about having your own apartment somewhere? You know, it might be expensive, but have you ever thought about that? And I said, oh, it'll be fine. You know, it's just what it is and it's going to be fine. And I let that go. And within about a week, maybe 2 weeks, this partner's sister and her husband had come to visit us and they were almost like my in-laws at that point. We'd been living together for 2 years. I'd been to several family events. I thought of her as my sister-in-law and we hardly ever drank, the two of us, my partner and I, and I really loved a glass of red wine occasionally. So I opened up this bottle of red wine and his sister and brother-in-law had had some, and I opened a bag of potato chips and I'd had a handful of potato chips and I'm drinking some wine and I thought I was having a lovely time. And then he entered the room and made a comment about my weight and walking my talk about being a natural, how could you be a naturopath and be eating potato chips and drinking wine. And all of a sudden, I just almost couldn't help it. I just started to cry. So I left the situation and my sister-in-law had gone upstairs and she hadn't witnessed that part. So I'd gone upstairs to get away from this situation and to have a moment. And she caught me at the top of the stairs and she took both my hands in her hands and she looked at me and she said, what's going on? What's wrong? And I told her, I finally opened up to the abuse because I'd been quiet about it. Like I'd said to my son, I kind of brushed it under the corner. I'm a tough woman. He's just a jerk and I'm a tough woman and I can handle this. And the way she looked at me, the compassion, and I told her what had been happening and what had just happened. And she looked me in the eyes and she said, Christy, every single word is a fist. You need to leave this relationship. And this was pivotal for me. This was his sister saying this to me. This snaps me out of, like, made me give my head a shake and go, his sister is saying this to me. Somebody else sees this. Okay. So I started to feel like, okay, I'm leaving. Now next, what's next? And I had another experience. It's a little bit, I don't know. I believe in the synchronicity of the universe. And I happened to be online one morning in my email box, a message from Mel Robbins had shown up and she's a motivational, inspirational speaker. And it was literally the full screen was her face and her hand and her finger saying this. And she said, and you have the power to do what even you think only other people can do. And I was like, that's it. I'm moving out. And I called a realtor that day. And I knew exactly the place in the city that I would love to live. We went looking at a place. I organized through all of my own finances, all of my own time. This is how I did this all secretly, remember, because this is a man who would have said, if I'd said I'm leaving, he would have been like, bye, see you tonight, out the door you go tonight. And I had two kids, and I didn't want to be pushed out the door that day, because he would have done that. So I strategically planned. I managed to purchase the house, get all the financing, buy all my furniture, do everything I needed to do in silence, quietly, pretending that I was still invested in the relationship. He had a trip to go on that he'd asked me to go on about 3 or 4 weeks later. And I basically said I couldn't do it. I wasn't feeling very well. He should go with a friend. And I just didn't think I'd be any fun that weekend. So he should go. And he did. And I moved out that weekend and replaced everything the way it had been and left and escaped, so to speak. And it was all those little things were pivotal to happen. You know, I think with narcissistic abuse, you really begin to feel what that other person tells you about you. You really begin to embody that you're worthless and that you're dirt, you're nothing. And then when they love you, it's like this high. You're like, oh my gosh, they love me again. It's so great. And then it swings down into this abuse again. And I had gotten so low. It took multiple things to motivate me. And maybe even this conversation, you never know. Our conversation today might be one thing that lets somebody know if a woman like me can do it, that person can do it too. And it's survival. You have this sense of self-preservation that kicks in, and it becomes that much greater than trying to hide or pretend or make it work. You just eventually your self-preservation kicks in and you're like, I have to do this. I have to do this for me. And so I'd done many, many, lots of reading and lots of, you know, one of the books that really helped me was called Attachment. It was written by Stephen Levine, I think is the name of the author. And it talks all about adult attachments. And I really learned what kind of an attacher I am. So I had, once I did looked at that book and I could answer all the questions and do the questionnaire and figured out for me, I kind of understood if I ever were to get into another relationship, what the other, you know, what the other traits might be that I'd go looking for as an anxious attacher, which is what I am. And I just knew I would never be with another avoidant anxious or another narcissistic person. I made a list for myself of all the reasons that I left that partner. And I went back to it often because that nostalgia kicks in and you think to yourself, oh, it was so good during those times. Maybe if I just called him again, it would be different. No, I would go through my list and remind myself of all of the things that he had done to abuse me, to keep me low, to not support me. And I would get the visceral feelings again. And I'd be like, right, I'm never going back to that. I'm never going back to that. And I haven't. I have remarried since then. And I'm in a wonderful relationship with a very supportive partner who is a secure attacher. And he's very, very good to me. And I never knew that I could have a relationship this calm, this relaxed, this enjoyable, with as much, you know, we have lots of adventure and there's still chemistry and charisma, but it's not at all like the roller coaster ride that you get with the narcissist or the avoidant type, anxious avoidant type attachers. I'd also done lots of other therapy in between, my own EFT counseling. And eventually I've been led to the Brave Thinking Institute and trained as a transformational coach myself. So in my practice, it's really, really critical. You know, all of those emotions that I was in, actually, maybe I could tell you a little bit more of that story about I've battled with some skin cancer lately in the past 6 years. And the first lesion came up when I was in that last abusive relationship. And I had it removed literally within a couple of weeks of leaving that relationship. And our skin is protective, right? Like our skin is our protective layer. And I wasn't protecting me, right? I was not protecting me and no one was protecting me. And so it doesn't surprise me on a metaphysical level that I would have a manifestation of a physical disease on my skin. And so it's critical that we learn to treat ourselves so well. Like we have to learn to treat ourselves like we would our lover. We have to learn to treat ourselves like we are the most important person on this planet without the ego, you know, just in terms of loving our lives, loving ourselves, because that's the vibration and the frequency that heals us. That's the vibration and frequency that heals our physical state. Otherwise, to stay in those low vibrations, those negative feelings of worthlessness and self-hatred and loathing, which I would tell you are probably, you know, when we talk about overcoming abuse, yes, I've overcome the narcissistic childhood abuse. I've overcome some neglect and with my mother. I've overcome two pretty serious relationships that were definitely narcissistic and abusive emotionally and verbally. And I think the hardest part is overcoming the self-abuse. This is the part that when we buy into all of the programming and the beliefs that other people put on us, that's like the hardest part. That's truly, we can escape those things, but we can't escape ourselves. And we have to be able to learn to value ourselves in a way that no one else would value us. In fact, the next time I thought about getting into a relationship, I actually visualized myself, it might sound funny, but like as an empress, that was the word I used. I am like an empress and I'm standing on my, not necessarily a throne, but almost like a platform. And if the man is interested in me, he is going to have to climb those stairs and he is going to have to present his case. And I get to decide over my life. I get to decide who is the best, most worthy person of me because I value me. I put myself, in a sense, on that pedestal without the ego, just in that sense of I deserve this kind of wholesome and whole being loving. And so that's actually the biggest part, I think, in transcending any form of abuse is learning to transcend the abuse that we learn to give ourselves. Even after you break free of someone else, you have to put the tools in place. And that's where the transformational coaching comes in for me. I use several different programs that I teach that I've learned and been trained in as a life mastery consultant with the Brave Thinking Institute through Mary Morrissey. And it's amazing. We start with like a dream builder program. So I help women start with blueprinting the vision of their dreams. I take them through a process of drafting and blueprinting their dream life. Like, what would your dream life would be if you knew that you could have everything or anything you wanted? What would you love? That's the question I have them ask. What would you love? And then we start getting images. The universe speaks to us in our minds as images. That is the currency of the universe, is images and ideas. And so we start getting these ideas and we start holding to that blueprint. And then I help them learn to bridge from where they are now over or across the gap from where they are now into where that vision is that they would love to be living. And all the while we're working on transformational thinking, we're learning to overcome paradigms, we're learning to overcome self-sabotaging behavior, we're repatterning the old beliefs, we're facing the old beliefs head on. What did I really believe? And then when we say, well, up until now, it's a phrase I use all the time. Up until now, it stops the energy. Up until now, I might have believed that that was the only kind of love I deserved, but I now trust in the universal principles of abundance. And I am a child of the universe. I deserve amazing love. You reinstall the old belief. You have to release the old belief, but then you've got to reinstall it with something different. If you don't, you risk that old pattern sucking you back in, the gravitational field of that old thinking. And so the transformational thinking, the EFT tapping, those have all been tremendous in helping me release that old trauma and find my center and find and design and live a life that I love living. So that's just in a little nutshell, kind of my history and where I take people in my process.
How amazing that you are grounded and clear enough about your entire life journey with everything that contains it, to not go on a tangent here and there and forget about the main point, but to really drive us home to the wholeness of loving ourselves first. And what do you do with all your different modalities that you have learned is to help people love themselves completely without any reserve.
Yeah, and the other things are supportive, right? Like to me, there are pillars of healing. Yes, our nutrition counts. Yes, our exercise counts. Yes, our sleep counts. But if we don't have the mindset, if we don't have that love inside of ourselves, we won't ask the right questions to get led. If you're actually going to live from your conditions, which our conditions as abused women suck. Those conditions, we will never escape those conditions by thinking within those conditions, by living within those conditions. We actually have to access a higher part of ourselves, which I think when I listened to some of your story in the past too, for me, it was God. There was always a moment that I knew that there was a higher power and that it wasn't all me. There was something wrong with these other people. And it wasn't like I was trying to be spiteful or mean. It was trying to make sense of it all. It was just trying to make sense of it. And it didn't make sense that it could always be all my fault. Like, it just didn't make sense. So I guess I have that common sense kind of thing, and it just wasn't making sense for me. And so we've got to, without that pillar, that is a pillar in healing in my practice, that pillar of knowing who you are as your soul and your soul purpose and feeling that love of your life. Because every morning I wake up now and I think to myself, I'm so grateful for this life, this today, this unlived version of my life. I've never lived this before. I'm so grateful to see what happens in this day. Like I got to see this day. And I would suggest anyone who's struggling, start to try that out. And don't leave your bed till you've done something like that. Because otherwise, you don't have the gratitude to start your day. Right? It's gratitude for my life. It's gratitude for me. And I can just let other people be. I get to decide whether I hang with them or not. I get to decide whether they're part of my life or not, but they get to be who they are. I don't have to spend any time trying to make someone be different, trying to make someone be something else. I'm just going to take care of me and do what's right for me. And if you fit into that pattern and you fit into that, then that's great. And if you don't and you're my spouse, of course, we're going to talk about that. Like my current spouse, we're going to talk about that and we're going to see if we can't work together to make things even better than they are. But in terms of abuse, I don't tolerate abuse anymore from anyone. I'm not open for abuse. Like my sign is closed. It's not
Exactly.
welcome here,
Exactly.
right?
And you notice it before it starts to even show. And as soon as there is the slightest red flag, you are here. Okay, that is a no-no. And if you cannot respect it, you are out. Done.
Yes.
Finish
Yeah.
it.
I agree with you 100%. I actually am so surprised. It's funny. I wouldn't have labeled, like in the beginning of my childhood, I wouldn't have labeled my dad as narcissistic personality disorder. But as time's gone on and I've had so much counseling and so much EFT and so much other work that I've done on myself, I actually just thought he was a liar. I just thought he was a pathological liar. And it wasn't until I started reading and investigating and listening to podcasts like this and starting to see myself and other people that I was like, wait a minute, this really is an issue that he has. And then I learned more about it. It wasn't until then that I started to break free of it. Like you're so caught up in it when you're in it, you have to ask a higher part of you. You've got to question. You've got to start seeing yourself reflected in other people. And being like, oh, what's going on with my life? Why is this happening? And I do, as much as I feel like I said before, I was a victim of that abuse, that was done to me. I fully feel like every narcissistic act was done to me. I also feel a strong sense of responsibility now. It's up to me to do what I need to do with that. Like my awareness now has led me. I don't believe I created that on a conscious level. I believe on a subconscious level, I allowed it to happen because it's what felt normal or it's what I believed was all I was worthy of. But now that I know I'm worthy of more, now that I know my value, now that I see other women that have broken free from this, I feel inspired to be my best self. And that's when the growth happens. That's when we have that sense of our own self. And that we've got power, the power inside of me, the power inside of you, the power inside of any of your listeners today, it's far greater than any of our circumstances. And if we can tap into that, we can get ideas and figure things out. There'll be someone we bump into. There'll be someone that we can ask for help. There'll be some sort of path that is alternative from where we're at right now. If we just allow ourselves to know that zero people deserve to be treated with abuse, zero people. There are broken people in the world. I've done loads of forgiveness work, and I think forgiveness is like an onion. It's like a layer. You know, sometimes I get the layer done. I think, oh, thank goodness I'm done forgiving my father. And then something else happens and I'm like, what? I'm back here again. I have more forgiveness work to do. And I begin it again, because forgiveness is for me. Forgiveness isn't for him. You see, as long as I'm condemning him in the halls of my mind, I'm the jailer, and I am walking the halls of my mind all the time and condemning him. It's exhausting, and it keeps me at a very low vibration. I've learned to separate his being from his behavior, right? They're separate things. His behavior in human form is not his being on a soul form. And I've learned to separate those two things, which has allowed me to have forgiveness. And it's for me, forgiving, for me to move forward, to have the life that I was intended to live.
Done. Yes, how amazing. Thank you so, so much. Dr. Christine, I see radianthealth.ca as in Canada, mm-hmm. as your main website, radianthealth.ca. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Christine Perkins at radianthealth.ca. That's the easiest way to just send you an email and inquire about, okay, what do you think about that circumstance? And then you will really give the space for the person to find out what is the root cause of what is the question that is being asked. And
even if they're working with someone else too, right? This might just be, and it doesn't have to be me. Even if they've been working on this and working on something physical or working, but they haven't explored EFT or transformational coaching, this is a really critical part of it's a pillar. And if you don't address all the pillars, you're going to be wobbly, and things are going to wobble and not quite settle and not be that vibrant, radiant health that you deserve to have. So I have, I put aside time out of my schedule to have what I call clarity calls with my prospective clients or patients to discuss where they're at and what they might be interested in pursuing. And I can give them an assessment at the end as to whether a program I do or some coaching through EFT sessions with me, because I work virtually with anyone around the world. We just find a time that works for us. That kind of thing can happen as well. But even if it's not me, this is like your wake up moment, right? These are their wake up moments of there might be more out there than I realized that I could try, that I could, you know, empower myself with, because that's what it's all about, is claiming your own power back.
That is absolutely beautiful. Dr. Christine, a big thank you for bringing us your wisdom. Thank you for sharing your life. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much.